Well, stay tuned. Coming up, we're scheduled to talk with Charlie Sturgis from the Mountain Trails Foundation. Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt on the phone with an update on the development projects throughout the county. Former Summit County Commissioner Bob Richer will be talking about the county's intent when they approved the Boyer Tech Park development agreement back in 2008. And finally, I'll be talking with the executive director of the Utah chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, Ronnie Daniel, about the upcoming Wasatch Back Walk to end Alzheimer's. Stay tuned. And on the phone with us with that report, Charlie Sturgis. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Leslie. You know, this is going to be kind of a rather benign report today. It looks like it's going to be absolutely gorgeous all weekend. And the only thing I can really report that might be trail-worthy information for people is the Salt Lake running race will be on this weekend in Round Valley, a 15K race. It is being sort of run basically in a virtual format, and you will find aid stations and signs out in Round Valley. Otherwise, you know, all I can really say is people are out there just enjoying the trails in a big way. If everybody just has fun, employs basic good etiquette, we should have a great weekend out there. Stay away from the fire zones. Have fun.
Charlie, thanks. KPCW News Time now. Well, a heads up for those of you who may be traveling to the Salt Lake Valley, I-80 is scheduled to be closed in both directions starting at 9 a.m. this morning. That's according to the Unified Fire Authority. What they need to do is to support the firefighting operations there due to the fast-moving wildfire that started about 6:30 last night. I-80 last night was closed between Park City and Salt Lake City, two vehicles so that firefighters could battle the blaze on the ground and from the air. That highway reopened at about 9:30, but again scheduled to close at 9 a.m. in both directions starting this morning. According to the latest report on the Utah Fire Information website, the fire was human-caused and still at 0% contained. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Well, on the phone with me now with an update from the Summit County Planning Office, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Hi, Leslie. Good morning.
So let's just start off with any new developments that have come through the door.
Since we talked last time, we've got roughly, a little more than 20 new applications that have desks. Excuse me. Again, they run the spectrum, everything from, low impact permits to plat amendments to Board of Adjustment type items. But there are two that I kind of want to bring to your attention. The first happens to be in the Pine Brook area on a piece of property that's on 3085 Pine Brook Road. It's just to the south of sort of the commercial area where the grocery store is and the Park City Day School. Local residents there might recognize it as the triangular piece of property where there's an old tennis court sitting on that. We have an application, actually two applications for this. One for a rezoned a community commercial, and then the second accompanying it is a conditional use permit for 21 residential townhouse units. And this particular project is an affordable housing project to be proposed on this site. It's going to be a mix of 2 to 3 bedroom townhouse units, all at 80% or below the area median income. We're just beginning to circulate this project for service provider review. The utility districts, the fire districts, all of that. We don't have a date scheduled for the Planning Commission yet. This project, the rezoned a community commercial and the conditional use permit, is similar in process, not in project type per se, but in process that was used on the Lincoln Station development, which is under construction on Bittner Road. The other that we have is a final site plan in the Promontory area. That's going to be for an additional 110 residential lots. I point that out just simply to help illustrate the fact that, particularly in the Promontory area, there's a lot of development going on. Last we talked about a month back, we had kind of a conversation about, you know, what's going on in the building world, and, you know, are we seeing an influx of new residents, you know, trying to, you know, get out of the more urbanized areas because of things like the pandemic. And I don't know if this is directly related, but it does indicate that we still have a pretty hot construction market here in Summit County. But those are really sort of the big ones out of that list of 20.
Yeah. So I, you say it runs the gamut, but it sounds like the projects that you've kind of relayed to me are all residential. Do we have any, are we talking about any commercial or a lot of remodels or?
A lot of remodels for sure. No new significant commercial projects out there. I think we chatted a little bit about the small expansion at the Smith's grocery store. We're seeing those sorts of things coming through. But in terms of like major significant square footages, no. We do have the New Park Commons project that's been under construction for a season or so. That's going to be bringing with it about 12,000 square feet of new commercial. It's also going to include 38 affordable housing units above that. And again, those are going to be a mix as well of studio, one-bedroom and two-bedroom units. And for listeners out there, this particular project is the building that's going in next to the amphitheater space in the plaza area at New Park, just to the south and the west of sort of Maxwell's in that area, and a whole lot of public input on that project. But I guess kind of looking back at it in retrospect, I think that's kind of a win-win for everybody. It's, you know, a win for our championing some, you know, workforce affordable housing. It's a project that I believe now that the property owner, the developer, the Crandalls, believe is a real viable project. No impacts on those public spaces that are next to it. And that project should be completed based on what we're being told later this fall, possibly early winter.
Okay, so the amphitheater is protected, just it'll be shaded as opposed to kind of bright and sunny.
Yeah, no construction, no access, no impacts on the amphitheater.
Okay. You had told me off air that you cannot comment on the Hideout annexation and North Park attorney Bruce Baird's comments, who told us how difficult Summit County is to deal with. But tell us where we're talking about. If we were driving along 248, where would we look and what would we see about where this North Park
You're right on that, Leslie. You know, there probably isn't anybody who would love to talk fleas off a cat and chat more than me. I just can't on this one. Public may know that there's a temporary restraining order that has been filed for. There's a complaint, and given the litigation that's occurring around it, I really can't speak to it. But I can tell you where it is roughly. If you are an area resident and you're heading out to the Quinns Junction area, out 248 past 40, once you get through the light, you're going to see sort of the soils remediation cell. It's operable unit one that we call that. That's where all the mine tailings from up on the Empire Pass area is taken out to get capped. There's also the parking lot, the park and ride out there. If you can imagine the property that's just on the other side of OU1 in the parking area to the south and the east as it heads up into those pinyon juniper foothills, that's the area that we're talking about. It also wraps around to connect, imagine sort of a J or a crescent shape, in those foothills up to the Browns Canyon intersection where Stock Lumber is. That's the property that's involved in this matter.
So does it touch Hideout anywhere?
I believe there are areas that, based on their municipal boundaries, that there's areas where they touch Yes.
Okay. And my understanding is that North Park applied to Summit County back in January, didn't get on the agenda until July. Is that usual?
I'm not quite sure what you're being referred as is North Park, but there was, and I think we may have talked about it in mm-hmm. the past, we did receive an application in that area for a general plan amendment. I think there was some confusion out there kind of in the public that we were processing a rezoning application. It wasn't a rezone application. It was simply a proposal to amend the Snyderville Basin general plans, future land use map in the Quinns Junction neighborhood area to change the map from its current designation of open space and very low residential development to a mixed use. And that shouldn't be confused with the discussions that we've been having in front of the Planning Commission and Council of a neighborhood mixed use zone. This is just a future land use map, not a zoning map per se.
What's the difference? I mean, because it sounds like when you talk about switching from open space to, you know, a mixed residential or development, or mixed use development, it sounds like a zone change.
That's an excellent question. No, it's really a step. It's for that particular applicant, it would be potentially a step precedent, the first step towards requesting a rezone. The general plan is the document that we use to help sort of establish where we think development is going to be occurring in the future, the nature of that development, the intensity and the mixes of uses of those. It's sort of our aspirational, visionary sort of guiding document that leads us into our more nuts and bolts, sort of how do we implement that vision, you know, the zoning ordinance. The official zoning map of the Snyderville Basin is really the controlling document. But see, where it's important is if we're going to change our zoning map that establishes uses, what and how much, it has to be consistent with our general plan, that vision. And that vision and that general plan is both a narrative and an illustrative map form. Now, just because it may show up on that general plan as a potential, you know, future use, whether that's commercial or residential or some mix of it, doesn't always necessarily mean that, given the nature of that proposal, it will or will not be, rezoned. It becomes a function of, again, the nature of that project, how it's designed, how much, how it's being serviced. We never really got point. So
okay.
That's where we are today.
Let's see, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting on Tuesday. Related to that, has the Zoom technology been upgraded for the Dakota Pacific Tech Park public hearing?
It has been. We have now got the ability under the webinar portion of that for 500 participants. You know, what happened a couple of weeks ago was beyond anybody's ability really to predict. I mean, back in April when we went back to work via Zoom, we knew that we were potentially going to hit some hiccups. We moved forward with that, believing that it was important to continue the work of local government. That webinar we had had a capacity of 100 participants. Well, you know, 2 weeks ago, we exceeded that. And I know it was frustrating to everybody involved, including the community, but I believe the Planning Commission did the right thing. They recognized that, all the items were important on that agenda, but particularly the Tech Park Dakota Pacific discussion was very important to everybody in the community, and making the decision to do a hard reset to stop the hearing, to reschedule that item for the next meeting, I think was the right thing to do. And in this particular case, we've got a 500-person capacity. What we intend to do with the help of the commission and the chair, Ryan Dickey, is to help explain, again, early on at the beginning of the meeting, how people will access. We're gonna try and work both sort of on the planners who will be involved in that meeting with their applicants to make sure that if there are applicants and their team waiting to have their meeting or they're hearing what the Planning Commission addressed, that we're not going to be having them in the queue taking up spots for the public who want to speak to the tech park, which will be the first one on the agenda.
Okay.
For listeners out there.
So we
think we've got this in a format that's going to work this time.
Just a public hearing then? No decision expected?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. Just a public hearing. We're going to go back and redo what we wanted to do in the format that we had for the 28th. We're not going to be asking for any direction or action on the 28th or on this meeting on August 11th.
Okay. And what are the outstanding issues here? Everything?
Yeah, I think everything is on the table. What we want to do on the staff side is explain, again, what we have now, what exists now under the existing development agreement. And I heard you have Mr. Richer on the phone following me, and I'm sure he'll do an excellent job of explaining that because he was there when it happened. And then we're going to go talk about the changes that are being proposed. We're going to talk about the land uses that are being proposed, the amount of them, how they integrate. We're going to be talking about some of the bigger details, you know, the density. Is this an increase in density? The answer to that is no. We're going to be talking about, you know, whether or not this is taking away or impacting the existing open space. The answer to that is no. We're going to be talking about the transportation and traffic implications associated with this, both from the applicant's mobility consultant as well as our engineering department. And then we're going to take additional public comment and feedback from the commission and more than likely be coming back for additional discussion on this at the next meeting, which I believe, if my math is right, it's going to be August 25th.
Okay. Also on that agenda is a Spring Creek Trailhead parking conditional use permit. What's being proposed here?
This is a follow-up on a meeting that we had, well over a year ago, where the Little Red Stone house is in the Spring Creek area. Basin Rec has been experiencing some management problems. It's a really popular portal for that whole trail system to the north. And so this is a proposal to have a more formalized parking area for those guests and the users of the trail, hopefully balancing some of the concerns that were expressed from the neighborhood there. But it was an area that was contemplated as part of the original development for that whole neighborhood.
Okay. Hey, Pat, I need to leave it there. We'll talk to you next month. Thanks for your time.
As always, Leslie, thanks for taking the time to have me talk about this stuff. See you next month.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Pat Putt. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Again, I-80 scheduled to close this morning between Foothill and I-215 this morning and Jeremy Ranch at 9 a.m. to support the aerial firefighting operations and the Parley's fire. The interstate, according to UDOT, will remain closed until it is safe to reopen. Again, your alternatives, I just had a phone call from somebody coming up from the airport, to use Provo Canyon or I-84 Weber Canyon to I-15. Again, aircraft will be flying over the interstate, which is considered a danger to public safety. There will be 3 helicopters, 6 fire engines, and 3 crews working on the fire. According to the latest report, the fire was human caused. It is under investigation. However, no information about the point of origin yet. Again, the evacuation of the Mount Air development still in place. That's about 250 to 300 evacuations. At this point, no structures have been damaged. Again, a heads up, I-80 is closing here in a half an hour. Well, the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission will hold, again, another public hearing on the Dakota Pacific proposal for the Tech Park at Kimball Junction at its meeting Tuesday night. And again, allowing up to 500 people via Zoom. On the phone, I have a former member of the Summit County Commission, which we used to call him, that preceded the county council. And back in 2008, he voted to approve the development plans by the Boyer Company. Bob Richard joins us now on the phone. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Leslie.
So as we are reconsidering the development plans for this Tech Park property, we thought it might be a good thing to provide our listeners with a little bit of background. You were there as a county commissioner. You were charged as the principal negotiator of the Tech Park agreement between the Boyer Company, the former owner of the property, and Summit County. It was a big deal back then, as it is now. Kind of moving forward here, what's your biggest concern as we move forward with this development proposal that would essentially do away with what you approved?
Yeah, my biggest concern would be whether it be a traffic generator and whether the affordable housing that it offers or purports to offer, whether that really would be beneficial to the community. Before we get into that, though, I just want to comment on something that Pat Putt couldn't comment on. And I want to say that Pat and Peter Barnes and the planning staff, these are all really good people. Their hearts are in the right place. Our county council also, I know all five of them. They're a really sharp group trying to do the right thing. And there is an overlay here. And as a former county commissioner, I know that there's always things going on behind the scenes that aren't always factored into the public discussion. And when you get somebody who says it's virtually impossible to get a yes for any reasonable development in Summit County, and it has been for 25 years, you know, I feel that, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but, you know, you have to look at the facts. And if you just, you know, you certainly have been here, Leslie, over the last 25, 30 plus years. And have we grown? Have our sales tax revenue increased? Absolutely. We're an economic engine, and we are because we've held developers to higher standards. And, you know, we approved the Tech Park. It's certainly not the community's fault. It has not yet succeeded. But the overlay here is we must realize the pressures on our county council that they're facing from state legislators, that were unfriendly to developers. I think that's kind of the background. It has to do somewhat with the hideout situation, and it may even have to do with the Tech Park. And I guess what I would say is we don't want the Tech Park to be a sacrificial lamb in any way. The Tech Park development back in 2008 did a lot for the community. I guess two main things would be it supplied us with 325 acres in at the junction, an additional 325 acres in the Round Valley, added to our Round Valley holdings. But most significantly, it eliminated 800 units of density. And that translates at 35 to 4,500 square feet per home to about 2.8 to 3.6 million square feet of density. Now, getting into the weeds a little bit, and then I will specifically talk about traffic and affordable housing. Getting into the weeds, in 2008, the number that was bandied about for the commercial area was 1 million square feet. I'm not sure how it got to 1,295,000. Planner Kirsten Whetstone at the last meeting addressed what I had raised at the June 23rd meeting, which was that there is, in the 268-page development agreement, there is no, on no particular page that say, here's the square footage. What you have to do is you have to calculate each specific parcel. And in 2008, our planning staff supplied us with a number of approximately 1 million square feet. The reason that's significant is the developer, by proposing more than 1 million square feet, if in fact that's the correct number,
then he would be subject to policy 2.3 of the development code. Again, I'm probably getting into the weeds here, which talks about betterment, which talks about community enhancement and things of that sort, somewhat like our 1998 matrix code, which talked about community benefits.
Yeah, this. I'm going to say this sounds a lot like the Treasure Hill development, where all of a sudden now we're adding back a house square footages. But the applicant, and you heard Pat Putt, I hope, just say that that the applicant does meet the intent of the development agreement and are not in violation of Section 2.3 of the Development Code, again, which doesn't allow increased density without the compelling public benefit. The applicant says that the density isn't increasing; it's just different. So. I mean,
yeah, and I think that's what needs to be calculated and checked. And at the last meeting, Planner Whetstone was giving that information, but it's like telling a joke without getting to the punchline. She was verifying what I had said that there isn't a precise number, but you need to see how they arrived at the $1,295,000. Was it something that just was done by agreement, or are there the precise calculations? And in my opinion, there needs to be the precise calculations because it is of significance.
Yeah, but you didn't do the precise calculations back in 2008, just like we didn't do the precise calculations with Treasure back in 1985.
No, I believe we did do the precise calculations. And again, the planning department, I believe, came up with a number of around 1 million square feet.
Okay.
So if, in fact, that's the correct number, if the developer doesn't want to fall under 2.3, they have to cut approximately 300,000 square feet. Again, I'm feeling like we're a little bit too much into the weeds
for a lot of our listeners,
but let's talk about traffic and affordable housing.
Okay, at the Planning Commission meeting, you mentioned that there shouldn't be any development moving forward until there's a plan in place and funding committed from UDOT for the redevelopment of the Kimball Junction I-80 interchange. Why is that the applicant's problem? I mean, why shouldn't they be able to move forward with their plans? I mean, the mess at Kimball Junction isn't their fault.
No, it's certainly not, but this is one of the rare occasions where it's a contractual development agreement, and we don't have to do anything to stimulate growth in that area. It is what it is. The developer bought this, Dakota Pacific, bought this from the Boyer Company. They certainly bought it with their eyes wide open. There's certainly a degree of risk here. And, you know, when there's a lot of risk, there can also be reward, and that's kind of just how it works. And we would be trading what has turned out to be very slow growth for accelerated growth. A lot of the discussion about the traffic impacts have to do with the build out. And really, when you're talking about impacts to the community, it's not just a matter of the density. It's a matter of the rate. And in this particular case, we would be greatly accelerating the rate by building units here, by building 1,100 units here at the junction. And therefore, that would add to the congestion and the traffic that now exists. In the plan that was approved, and development was approved in this area, you had a plan that has historically turned out to give us some slow growth, which from my perspective turned out to be a good thing. Now, when you talk about the redevelopment of the Kimball Junction area, that's a major, major lift. It's not something where just the city, the county, and UDOT get together and propose a plan, and a year later the plan is in place. This is a $50 to $100 million redo based upon what the developer showed as sort of a conceptual plan. And the only way, in my opinion, this is going to happen is if we get the Olympics, which was probably a safe bet prior to March, but now with the pandemic and so forth, who knows whether we'll have Olympics in the future. The last Olympics, as you remember, Leslie, for instance, gave us the 40 to I-80 overpass out by the Silver Creek Junction. So there were some benefits to the Olympics. UDOT has what's called the STIP, the State Transportation improvement plan. It takes years to get on that, and then it takes years to move your project along. We did, when I was a county commissioner, you know, we've worked with UDOT. It takes many years behind the scenes. You need a lot of time and you need a lot of money. And what we don't, in my opinion, want to do is exacerbate the problems at the junction until we have this plan in place.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The applicant, though, I mean, just to play the devil's advocate here, the applicant says, mm-hmm. though, that they won't be, adding to the congestion here. Certainly not the kind of congestion that a tech park would provide during drive time. So, I mean, it's like, who do we believe?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of believing one or the other. Again, if you compare build out to build out, my response to that is, who knows which one would be a better plan? But clearly, the build-out of the tech park at its current rate is a 30 to 40-year build-out. The build-out of what they're proposing is a much shorter time frame. They want to get going. They want to provide this housing there. And, of course, there's also the issue at some point, Park City Municipal, you know, they contributed $12.5 million of the $25 million that we bought to buy the open space, but also to remove 800 units of density. But, okay, that was in the past. There's a feeling now that this is a commercial center. Maybe it would be good to put some housing there and specifically some affordable housing. So, you know, we can talk about affordable housing, and what I would say there is it's a tricky subject. I've been a part of the Mountain Lands Community Housing Board as a member and the chair for the last 5-6 years, whatever it's been. Scott Loomis and Pat Matheson did a little presentation a while back, and I'll share with you that, you know, our service level jobs have an average wage of about $44,000 in the community. Those people can't qualify for affordable housing based on an AMI, average median income, of $91,000 for a family of four, which is basically 80% of our median household income of about $114,000. The AMI is based upon average income for Summit County residents. Now, about 15,000 of us commute to Salt Lake City for higher paying jobs to afford to live in Park City, and that raises the AMI. So affordable housing at the tech park won't, in my opinion, reduce traffic. The folks who can afford the units will commute to work elsewhere. Meanwhile, the jobs created by the new hotel, offices, restaurants, etc., will not provide an income where people can afford the units. So they too will live elsewhere and commute. They talk about LIHTC, which is low income housing tax credits. I've suggested to the Planning Commission that they understand that, because LIHTCs are tied to not the wages of the area, but the income of the area. To make it work and to truly be affordable, you need donated land, as occurred at the Silver Creek Village. And the tail here is wagging the dog. We're talking about affordable units of 256, I think was the number, between 40 and 80%. Well, once you get to that 80%, you're talking rents of, for a two-bedroom, over $2,000 per month, for a three-bedroom, almost $2,300 per month. It somewhat compares to the market. So are we doing all this and really solving a problem? Are we really controlling? One of the things I suggested was that if we continue to negotiate this and we get a better deal, then some land perhaps is donated to the county for the county to do its own affordable housing project. You know, this also goes to the issue. You know, I said in my June 23rd comments that no developer will solve problems without substantial concessions. There aren't free lunches. I learned that in many years of being both a city council person and a county commissioner. There's always a trade-off when using someone else's money to solve your problems. Now, I heard you ask the developer during your on-air interview Would he be, you know, willing to put a dog park in there, senior housing, a farmer's market? The response is yes to everything. Well, I heard the term recently, unicorn developer, and I love that term, a unicorn developer that will do it all for us. You know, I read something from our mayor, Andy Bierman. I want to make very clear, he wrote this in relation to sprawl and the hideout situation, and he did not specifically address this to the tech park. But I think it applies. And what I'm paraphrasing what Mayor Andy said, but what he basically said is what's out there is an urgent solution to address traffic and affordable housing. These require politically complex and expensive solutions. So it's alluring to go in search of the unicorn developer that will do it for us. They don't exist. All developers are in it to make a profit. Government exists to do what the private market can't or won't. It's time we collectively acknowledge that we can bargain for better gets with existing entitlements, but at best, our gets will only lessen the new impacts and never create enough benefit to solve existing challenges. We're in a hole, and we need to stop digging for buried treasure. I think that says it very, very well as to what we are doing here. I don't think it's really going to help us with affordable housing. I think it's going to exacerbate the traffic situation. I think we need some transparency in what the exact number is for the square footage, because that becomes a very significant number. And we can also talk about what's going on around us right now. There's lots of land around us. Sometimes I think we forget we're surrounded by thousands of acres of undeveloped land. This is not the only available land to develop a mixed-use neighborhood on with abundant affordable housing and a commercial center. Clearly, you know, with the construction now of Silver Creek Village, if you haven't driven out there, it's underway. And it's 1,290 units of density. So I would say one area that is ripe for a supermarket and other commercial development is the Silver Creek Village area out by the Home Depot. If hideout annexation is not blocked, then they're talking about, what, over 300,000 square feet of commercial and office space, 3,500 residential units. And in the county's lawsuit, they used a factor of about three people per unit for around 10,000 people there. So if you take the 1,100 units here and you use three people per unit, you're adding 3,300 people to the traffic congestion at the junction. And even if, we can also talk about...
Well, we don't have time to talk about it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But I do
okay,
have...
Okay, ask
I do,
my I next just, question, Leslie.
Well, I just have one other issue I just wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think what the pandemic has shown all of us is the need for diversification of our economy. And I guess mm-hmm. I'd just like you to talk a little bit about that, because in 2008, it was like, well, what we want is a tech park. We want high-paying jobs, and we're going to provide the mountain, the market rate units there. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like what we're getting as the proposal is just more of the same of what we've already got.
Of the new proposal.
Yes.
I mean, I agree with that. The tech park hasn't worked. But do we know why the tech park hasn't worked? Sure. Right after it was approved in 2008, early 2009, we went into a recession. So they didn't get off to a good start. Perhaps the language in the development agreement, which I'm proud of because it somewhat restricted the developer to very specific uses, I don't have a problem. There's nothing that can't be improved upon. You maybe look at that language, maybe loosen it up. But we still need an area where we could diversify our economy. I think this is a good area where perhaps that can be done. Keeping in mind that we want to maintain the slow growth nature what we currently have. I think it's worked out very, very well for the community. There were tremendous community benefits, including the land for the transportation and transit center. So I would say, in our last few minutes to the community, that please don't feel yourself to be an unimportant cog in some machine. This is Park City. There has always been a Park City magic. At the Planning Commission meeting, I talked about the magic of the Carl Winters School. I won't go into that now. But even our whole open space program, which I was involved with as a county council member starting in 1990 when we purchased the Oscarthorpe Barn, now called the McPolin Ranch. There are half a dozen purchases along 224 that now make up our open space. There are half a dozen purchases in Round Valley that make up our thousands of acres of open space. I never thought that would happen. There's a magic here, and each of us has a personal stake and sufficient access to decision makers to believe that we can exert at least some influence in determining the condition of our community.
Okay.
This is such a time, I would say to our community, don't get cynical, don't give up, but show up. You don't want to just be a taxpayer. You want to be a citizen of our community, and citizens participate in the governmental process. So this coming Tuesday at 11, Tuesday the 11th at 4:30, click on the Zoom link. You can find it at summitcounty.org. We had over 100 people, I guess, at the last meeting that weren't able to speak. Please show up again, and let's get closer to 500, and participate by simply stating your name, where you live, and saying something along the lines that this doesn't make sense right now. I don't want to exacerbate the traffic problems, and please vote no. That's all our Planning Commission really needs to hear, because I believe that the Kimball Junction Master Plan never really had, while they offered a public input time and session, it was hypothetical. It didn't affect people. People are now seeing the effect of it. And, that Kimball Junction Master Plan, the goals are admirable, but the proposal in its present configuration does not adequately further many of those very goals. It just compounds our problems. And I think if people and our decision makers step back, you almost have to see that logically.
Okay,
an obligation.
Bob, I got to cut you off.
Sure.
Thank you for your time. And again, that meeting is happening Tuesday, August 11th. And I also just want to let people know that you are the chair of the board of the KPCW Board of Directors. So thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Appreciate it.
We all know the coronavirus pandemic has changed how things get done these days, and the annual Wasatch Back Walk to end Alzheimer's is no different. On the phone to tell us what's planned for this year under the COVID-19 restrictions, I have the executive director of the Utah chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, along with a member of the chapter's board and former volunteer chair of the walk, Debbie Morton. Thanks for your time, guys, and thanks for hanging on here. Ronnie, let's start with you and then just give us an overview of what the plan is this year.
Yeah, so certainly, as you mentioned, because of the coronavirus, we won't be gathering in large groups like we normally have in the past. But this year, the walk is going to happen everywhere. It'll happen in your neighborhood. It'll happen on your favorite trail. It'll happen in your favorite park. Take your dog on a walk. It can happen any way that you might want to. So the important thing is that the Alzheimer's disease has not stopped. It's still relentless. And so we must be just as relentless in raising funds and awareness about the disease.
So, Debbie, a walk is set for the Park City area for August 22nd. What's going to happen?
Well, everybody will walk from their own neighborhood. They're going to walk virtually on their own. And they'll go on an app, and they can follow, the app will follow you. And then in addition to that, there will be a Promise Garden ceremony at 10 o'clock. Right before people are supposed to walk, or you can walk beforehand and end your walk with the Promise Garden ceremony. There will also be an actual Promise Garden at Cole Sport and along the fence coming up 224 in Kimball Junction. That's just a drive-by Promise Garden because we can't gather.
Mm-hmm. So there's
also going to be one in Heber as well.
That's right.
The South Park, the Southfield Park in Heber from 9 to 3 o'clock.
Okay, so no specific trail. What's the app that people need to download?
If they just search for Walk to End Alzheimer's in their whichever style of phone they have, they'll find the app and they can download it there.
Okay, so how much are you hoping to raise? Because this is a fundraiser.
It is. In the past year, we raised right around $160,000 in our Fetchback Walk, and so we're hoping to raise at least that much, if not a little bit more.
And how does that work? I mean, people just make donations to participate in the walk?
Yeah, so the first and foremost thing is we love to have people participate. And so they can do that by going to alz.org/walk and sign up their own team. And then once they're signed up, it'll walk you through how to do an online fundraiser, how to reach out to your friends, do a Facebook fundraiser, do any kind of an event that you might like to do and get people to support that. Debbie is a master at this. She's actually been the top individual fundraiser for the whole state of Utah in the last couple of years. So she's got it down to a science. But it's really just about connecting with your friends and family who might already have been impacted by this disease and want to make a contribution to support it.
Okay. And then what's the money going to be used for?
So all the money stays locally here in our Utah State chapter. And so we do that to help provide care and support services to people who are living with the disease and their care partners. We do that through support groups. We do it through community education. We do that through helping to raise awareness and connect people to resources like our website and our 24/7 helpline. So those are the things that we do there in Summit County and Moscow County. We do that statewide, and we're increasing our volunteer engagement, so that'll help us with our reach and our impact.
So what do we know about the disease that we didn't know a year ago?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, every year the Alzheimer's Association sponsors an annual international research conference, and it just happened last week, actually. And one of the huge announcements that came out of that was a new blood biomarker for Alzheimer's disease. And in the past, the only way to really get a firm diagnosis of if you have the disease is to go through a whole battery of tests. And after you go through the tests, it's pretty certain if you have dementia or Alzheimer's disease. But this breakthrough is now with this blood biomarker is that anyone could get a blood test to see if they have the trace of the tau protein, which is thought to be one of the causes of Alzheimer's disease. And you might be able to know that up to 20 years before. And that might sound scary. I don't want to know about that. But the other side of this is there's so much we know about what we can do to reduce our risk. And so if you knew, for instance, you have this blood biomarker, you could engage in healthy activities, in a heart-healthy diet, get more involved in a research trial. So you could really help move that further down the road. So if you, hopefully to the point where we might actually have a way to cure the disease.
So how available is this blood test?
Well, it was just announced last week, as I mentioned. And the indication is probably about a year before it'll be available at your local doctor's office to do that blood test. But the need to visit science has progressed to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the interesting question, though. Do you or don't you? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, one other huge breakthrough that was announced earlier this year is that a company, Biogen, has submitted to the FDA the first ever disease-altering drug that actually helps to reduce the buildup of amyloid plaque in the brain, which is another cause of the disease. And so this could be a huge breakthrough. And so we know it takes anywhere up to 18 months for the FDA to approve the drug, but it was just submitted this spring, and so we're hopeful that within a year or so we might know whether that will be available to us.
Okay. So if people are interested in helping you raise money, do they need to register? I mean, how does that work?
Yes. Yeah, so they just simply go to alz.org/walk, and as I said, they can go there and they can sign up their own team, or if they wanted to just donate to a local team there in some of Wasatch County. They can just simply search for a team in their area and donate to those teams. Or they can, if they don't want to go to the website, they can actually call our 24/7 helpline at 1-800-272-3900, and the Helpline folks can help get set up a team or make a donation there.
Okay. Hey, Ronnie, Debbie, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, the only other thing I'd like to mention is that it's important for people to realize that you start developing Alzheimer's 20 years before you show symptoms. So living a healthy lifestyle is really, really important. And as Ronnie said, eating a healthy diet, keeping your stress level down, your blood pressure, cholesterol low, increasing your cognitive activity, getting good sleep, and exercising are all really, really important to preventing Alzheimer's.
Okay. Debbie, Ronnie, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Again, the walk to end Alzheimer's happening here along the Wasatch Back August 22nd. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:59. 61 degrees here in Old Town Park City. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Park City, again, as of now, I-80 scheduled to close. We have not heard how long is expected to close, but basically until they can get the work done and to shut down that Parley's fire. Burning some 200 acres, 0% contained, last word I've had, human cause. Be careful out there. Have a great weekend.